Hey, what are you doing for lunch today?
A bunch of us are picking up our CSA shares.
I keep hearing that term, CSAs. What's a CSA?
It just stands for Community Supported Agriculture. The idea is that you can sign up and a local farm delivers whatever's in season. And you know you're supporting local business and the food is great.
Oh, that's cool. Is there still time to sign up?
I actually don't know, but let's go down to the break room. They're dropping off the shares now. Ah, just what I was hoping for. Strawberries are in the shipment.
Strawberries?
Yeah, I have a fruit share component in mine.
Well, are they frozen strawberries, like from last summer?
Oh, no, no way. They are fresh.
I thought you said that a CSA was about supporting local farms, delivering local food.
Exactly. Doesn't it feel so good to support local ag?
Strawberries don't grow around here in February.
I'm not following you here.
This is not Mexico, Evan.
Oh, you're such a nag, aren't you? I'm sure this is from a reasonably local-ish farm.
The label says Driscoll's.
See? We're supporting Mom and Pa Driscoll.
They're like the PepsiCo of agriculture.
Pepsi probably started out as a small company, you know.
Oh my, what else do I see in this bag? Is that a mango? Did Cornell create some kind of new hybrid or something?
Mangoes are local to someone, and that's kind of the point here.
And you have frozen fish. That's a swordfish. A freaking swordfish, Evan.
Let me guess, there's no swordfish in Lake Ontario.
Right, there aren't.
Well, have you checked Seneca Lake or Canandaigua?
Listen, I like the idea of a CSA, but I think you've lost the plot.
Okay, you just be a purist. Meanwhile, I can't wait for next week's shipment.
What's in it?
Pineapple and banana. Oh, I'm Evan Dawson. You just heard Megan Mack and me playing up the kind of scene that farmers probably love to hate. So let me explain a little bit. That was cheeky and maybe a little extreme, but our connection this hour is going to be made tomorrow. It's CSA Day. But the reason we're talking local agriculture this hour is about more than just CSA Day. We're going to explore a question. What exactly is a CSA and what is not a CSA? Maybe it seems obvious, maybe your place of work signs up for deliveries, but here's the thing. If you talk to farmers, and really small farmers, in private, they're more likely to express some frustration about this whole thing. That's because the local food movement has become a kind of trend. I'm not saying it's not authentic. I mean, I think it's wonderful for the most part. But what happens to trends, right? They get monetized. So farmers will tell you, especially if they've had a drink or two, if they trust you maybe, that some of these businesses that call themselves a CSA are not really a CSA. And what's happened is that actual CSA farms have been losing customers. They're at risk here. And the general public doesn't have a great grip on what a real CSA should be. So that brings us to Elizabeth Henderson. She is an organic farmer who has been working on a charter. That charter would define what a CSA is, with the idea that farmers who meet the criteria, maybe they can sign it, thereby show customers that they are a true CSA. I'm excited to talk about that this hour with Elizabeth Henderson, an organic farmer, originally of Peacework Farm. She's the creator of this new charter and the author of Sharing the Harvest, a citizen's guide to community-supported agriculture. Welcome to you, Elizabeth.
Thank you. It's great to be here this morning.
No swordfish in your shares, by the way.
No strawberries growing in my garden yet.
No strawberries either. Ruth Blackwell, she runs Mud Creek Farm, another organic farmer, and great to have you as well. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Well, okay, so, and by the way, no swordfish in your shares either.
No, no swordfish.
We were being a little extreme, but did the point get made there? I mean, you know, does that make you cringe a little, Elizabeth?
No, I thought you did a good job. I actually once was offered by a farmer from Zimbabwe. He offered to send pineapples, a shipload, for me to distribute among CSAs in this country to put in their shares.
What did you say?
I said, well, maybe if you could dry them.
Nah, not happening. But is that, I don't want to say the temptation, but why is it that we've come to a point, you think, where we feel like our shares have to include things that are clearly not from around here or sort of wouldn't, you know, meet a standard of local or in season? Why do we do that?
I think part of the reason is that it's a convenience thing. So people who don't really understand the concept of a CSA or why they came about in the first place just are looking for the best option for themselves. And since they don't understand that part of the concept is to support local agriculture, they'll take whatever makes the best sense for them.
You agree?
Yes, I think that's a big part of it. And CSA started in the United States in about 1986, there were two different groups who started doing what they then defined as community-supported agriculture. Robin Van Enn and friends at Indian Line Farm, and then Trauger Grow and the farmers at Temple Wilton Farm. But it was at a time when there were a lot of other people working on solutions to the farm crisis. In my lifetime, close to 4 million farms have gone out of business in this country. This state has lost thousands of farms, and we're continuing to lose farms. And we're losing them because the price that farmers get for their products doesn't cover their costs of production. People who really love farming and are very attached to their land have to give up because they just can't afford to keep their farms going. And so many people were trying to solve the problem is how can we develop a support system for farms so that they can continue? And that's what CSA was.
It was a guaranteed income, right?
Of sharing the risk with the farmers. It's the only marketing that does that.
Yeah, I mean, a guaranteed income for farmers. And you might say, well, what if the season doesn't bring... And yeah, you know, we can't control the weather. But there is a component of real community support here, not just convenience. And we don't mean to make this hour a lecture. I mean, I know a lot of people have really good intentions. But I think part of the point is I've had to learn a lot. As somebody who, you know, I've had CSA shares and CSA in air quotes shares in a lot of different ways over the years, I've had to learn a lot about what it supports, what it doesn't, what the real impact is, what the best way to do it is. Listeners, if you're part of the CSA, if you want to share your experience, or if you've got questions, because we're going to go through kind of the charter here, we'll see who measures up here. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. This is also not meant to be an hour, just to malign the Good Food Collective, by the way. I mean, Chris Hartman's a wonderful guy. I've gotten to know him well and appreciate what his aims are. But it is about looking at, I think, a real pure definition of CSA. So, Elizabeth, how did you decide to create a charter? Tell me your thought process and, you know, how am I going to create all these points for a charter?
Well, our farm, Peacework, has had trouble getting enough members the past few years. And then I heard that this was happening all over the country, so it wasn't a particular something wrong with us. And I am, among other things, one of my hats is I am the honorary president of Urgency, which is the International CSA Network. And so I've been to these conferences in Kobe, Japan, in Beijing, China, with CSAs from all over the world. And I noticed that in every other country or continent where there are more than a few CSAs, they create a charter which defines what a CSA means. And it occurred to me that maybe if we had a definition that was accepted all over the United States and was very clear that a CSA is a connection with a single farm or with a group of farms who associate in some way, that would help CSAs get more members again.
And should we at least establish, and Elizabeth mentioned this a couple of times, but let's establish right out of the gate here that if this is not just an idea that, well, maybe local farms are struggling or some small farms are struggling, or maybe the CSA boom, if there was a boom, benefited big and small farms for a while, but you know, maybe some are starting to hurt. The New York Times had a piece called When Community-Supported Agriculture is Not What It Seems. And I just want to read from that, if I could, before we go on here. Quote from the New York Times, last Tuesday, a farm-to-table subscription service called Local Roots New York City dropped off boxes at pickup spots in New York City, including a cafe, a brew pub, and the offices of BuzzFeed. Alongside locally grown rainbow chard, romaine lettuce and beets, some members got bottles of olive oil from Italy or bars of chocolate and bags of dried pasta, both Brooklyn-made. From Rustic Roots, an organic food delivery service in the tri-state area, members could receive fruit boxes stacked with oranges, pineapples, and avocados. Although both companies use the term CSA to describe their service, the presence of middlemen between the farmer and the customer is precisely what traditional CSAs are designed to avoid. And since olives and oranges do not grow in this region, those products provide no direct income to local farmers, precisely the people the CSA was invented to benefit. Fair?
Fair. And going back to the Good Food Collective, I want to put my two cents in on that. I think that the the local food movement, or general people really wanting to support the local food economy in this area, I think that's a great thing, and I think it sort of exploded very quickly. And that's part of the problem in terms of people not knowing what a CSA is. I think that since it expanded so quickly, there just was, you know, a gap in knowledge. So I think that the Good Food Collective is a great thing, and it does support local farms to a certain extent. I mean, that's another market for local farmers to sell their produce to the local community.
Okay, but is it a CSA?
It's not a CSA, because the difference is that it's not a direct relationship between the eaters and the farmers. The Good Food Collective is a middleman. And to give all fairness, the Good Food Collective does not call themselves a CSA.
That's right.
Anymore.
It just happens a lot of the people who are members of the Good Food Collective will describe themselves as CSA.
Exactly.
Members.
I still talk to people who say, I get a CSA share from the Good Food Collective. The word CSA is not on their website anywhere, but people still don't quite understand that that's not a CSA. They still think of it as a CSA. So really what it is just a gap in knowledge about the difference between a food hub, like the Good Food Collective, which is buying from local farms, but not a guaranteed income for those farms.
It's to Chris Hartman's credit and everyone at the Good Food Collective, they don't call themselves a CSA.
They do not.
We've talked about it on this program. It's exactly what our guests are saying. It's just customers often think of it that way. And if you think of it that way, you may be missing the point of what CSA was originally designed to do. And, you know, the New York Times points out the way businesses have sort of exploited this. I don't think the Good Food Collective is exploiting anything, but there are businesses that do around this country, and the result for farmers, particularly smaller farms, is that we are at a point in 2017 where it's more of a struggle, and that if you think you're supporting CSA, maybe you should know about the charter. So where are people going to be? Let's work through this charter. Where are people going to be able to see this, by the way?
They can see the charter on the CSA sign-up day website that is has been created by Small Farm Central, which is a little business in Pittsford, Pennsylvania, that provides all kinds of good tools for CSA to use. Software that enables you to sign people up online and manage shares so that you can give up a week or two, things like that.
So online where?
It's a CSA sign-up day.
CSA sign-up day, and you'll find it there. The charter's there, and can I kind of read some of the points? Can we go through?
Sure.
Yeah,
all right. So here we go. It is up to each CSA farm and its community to build a model that suits them best and to mutually ensure that the CSA upholds the principles of this charter. Number one, farm members buy directly from the farm or a group of farms. There is no middleman. Is that number one for a reason? Is that the most important point on this?
That is number one because it's the only kind of marketing that is like that, where people buy directly and share the risk by buying in advance of delivery of the food.
Okay. And you want to weigh in on that as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the big problems for farmers is that most of a farmer's costs are upfront costs. So if you don't have that income before you start delivering your food, you usually have to go into debt. And that's a risky thing because a farm is inherently risky. You don't know what the weather's going to be like that year, all of those reasons. So having people pre-buy their share is critical.
Now, Piecework allows people to pay some upfront and then pay in installments through the season. But the money that we get at the beginning of the year is really seed money. Literally, it goes to help buy the seeds.
Real seed money. Look at that. And by the way, Matt on Twitter says, terrific topic to discuss and clear up confusion about what is a true CSA. We have been members of Piecework since 1999. And I assume, Matt, that means happy members of Piecework. That's a good run there. Number two on the charter, the CSA charter. The farm provides member families with high-quality, healthy, nutrient-dense, fresh and preserved local and low fossil fuel food or fiber, filling the share primarily with products grown on the farm or, if purchased from other farms, clearly identified as to origin. Tell me more about this one.
Well, sometimes a farm does want to add crops that they don't have. Most of the CSAs in California do this, where they buy in things from other farms in the area. Our farm, Peacework, has only done that very occasionally when there's been a real weather disaster, and we wanted to have something to give our members. But I've had members thank me for the weather experience that reduced the food in their share, because they said that otherwise they never really understand what weather means. And this is getting closer to nature, and that's important in their lives.
And the importance of identifying the origin. So if you're going to have a CSA that includes some product from other farms, you got to be transparent.
Right.
I think that part of that is that your members are part of your farm. They want to know that what they're getting is from the place that they know and from the people that they know and grown in the way that you grow things. So they want it to be transparent. I don't buy in any vegetables from other people, but I do buy bread from Small World Food and have an add-on bread share that people can, they don't have to take it, but they can if they want to. Just because Small World has sort of the same ideas as us. They buy everything as locally as possible and organically. And
New York grown wheat, which is great.
Which and milled. I think that it's becoming a thing where CSAs sort of want to add on as much as they possibly can to make things more convenient for their members, to make it more of a one-stop shop. But I think it's important to make sure that they know where it's coming from and that it follows the same ideals.
There isn't a Mon Pa Driscoll, is there, by the way?
I don't think so.
Not that I know of.
It's a very big company.
Yeah.
They sell fruit year-round and buy from thousands of farms. And I recently also heard that they have something like 1,000 greenhouses in Arizona where they're growing hydroponic organic fruit.
How do you feel about that?
I feel very negative about that.
Why is that?
Hydroponic is vegetables that are fed through the water. It's fertigation. And organic depends on having healthy soil. There's so many things that go on in the soil that we don't understand yet. So we don't know all the nutrients that plants are getting from through their roots and through all their gazillion associations with all the critters in the soil. So if you want a really healthy food, it has to come from healthy soil.
All right, number three on the charter for CSAs in the USA and Canada. Farm members commit to the CSA, sharing the bounty and the risks of farming by signing an agreement with the CSA and paying some part in advance, even as little as 2 weeks, for those on food stamps. Elizabeth?
Well, that upfront payment, as Ruth said, makes a really big difference for the farm, knowing that you have funds that you can depend on. And if you have a weather disaster or lose a few crops, your farm will survive to be in business the next year. When you sell at a farmer's market and you have a weather disaster, you could be out of business. And most of the family-scale, mid-sized farms in our area are really fragile businesses. We're working on very slim margins, and the price of food in this country overall is not high enough to cover our costs of production.
Okay. Ruth, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, that's true. Part of the reason a CSA can work this way instead of someone who's just growing tomatoes or whatever is that if you do have a disaster, usually it only affects some of your crops and not all of them. So say, for instance, you get late blight pretty early in the season, all your tomatoes die. Since you're a CSA and you're growing a very wide variety of vegetables, your members still get a pretty substantial share. They don't always, you know, they don't lose out entirely. You could have a great bean year, but a terrible tomato year.
I want to relate this to wine, just because in my world, everything relates to wine at some point. But wine's agriculture, right? And this reminds me of a story that I read in one of my favorite wine books, which is called Reflections of a Wine Merchant by Neil Rosenthal. And he tells the story of being sort of young in the business of importing wine. And in the early 1980s, you know, he had some smaller, not so well-known producers in Burgundy, and they had some terrible vintages. So what did most American importers do? They said, well, we're not buying your wine this year. Mm. Good luck with those bottles. And Neil said, no, we have a partnership here. I'm buying your wine. I'll sell it if I can. I know the year was tough. And those producers never forgot that. They said, wow, this is somebody who's really committed to us. That when we had a run of bad vintages, he was there. And he found a way to hand sell it to his customers, maybe for less of a price. But this is somebody who was really committed to us. Now, I know talking about Burgundy wine feels super high-end here, but trust me, most grape growers are not living high in the hog. They're working very hard in agriculture too. And it just reminded me of the value of saying to somebody, if I'm really committed to you, I'm not just there when the weather's perfect. I'm not just there when it's a good season, when Piecework and Mud Creek have said, wow, this is easy. This is great. I'm there for you because we're in this together. And is that kind of tied to this, Elizabeth?
Oh, definitely. The other side of it is that if it's a really good season, you get more with your share or higher quality. This past summer, where there was such a bad drought, you would have thought that CSA shares would be very slim. But somehow, if a farm had some water for irrigation, that weather actually produced bumper crops for the fall. So Piecework shares were the heaviest they've ever been, despite the climate change that's happening to us.
And can you both, real briefly, you mentioned food stamps in point number three. When we talk about SNAP or food stamps, we often have people, when we have those discussions, wonder if, you know, where you can use them, how they can apply. And, you know, some people feel pretty limited when they're in those circumstances. What do you do to work with people in that circumstance?
Well, people on food stamps have to make a special arrangement with our farm, but we can set it up so that they can pay every 2 weeks and get a share. They don't have to pay in advance because that's not allowed by the food stamp program. And I think both our farms, both Mud Creek and Piecework, allow members to pay on a sliding scale. And we explain to members what this is about. And it means that the people who are paying at the high end are offsetting the people who are paying on the low end. But it enables people of a wider range of income to get our great food.
Okay.
Yeah, we do that too. We also work with NOFA with their neighborhood share program, which is, I'm not sure where they got the funding, but they figured out a way to like subsidize.
I raised it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Thank Liz.
What a surprise.
It's a way for people who qualify financially to get a subsidized share.
And I hope to raise more too, because it's a very popular program with low-income people, and we would love to add more people to the neighborhood farm share. We do it only in Rochester and in Buffalo, and there are some other programs in other parts of the state, but we would love to create a statewide coalition of groups that subsidize shares for low-income people and raise enough money to do that.
One more short point about that is that as a CSA farmer, we're not having to think about the cost of shipping or storage like other farms do. So our shares usually already are, like if you went to Wegmans and bought the same share in the organic section of Wegmans, you'd be paying quite a bit more than what you would pay to get the same share at a CSA.
The other thing about going to Wegmans, this is nothing about Wegmans in particular, but if a farm sells to a retailer, the farm gets half of what the customer ends up paying. So there's like 100% markup. And that's why selling direct is so important to us, because that way we get most of the food dollar. The National Farmers Union every year publishes this chart, which is the farmer's share of the food dollar. And for most crops, it's a very small share, depending on how processed the food is. For highly processed food, it might be 3% of the farmer of the food dollar. If it's milk, it might be 33%. But that's still, you know, given who's really doing the work, it's a small percentage of the amount that people are paying for the food.
If you're just joining us, you're hearing from Liz Henderson, who is sort of a legend in farming, even though she wouldn't want me to say that. It's true. She's the author of Sharing the Harvest, A Citizen's Guide to Community-Supported Agriculture, with Robin Van Ann, and also the author of this new charter for CSAs in the USA and Canada. Matt on Twitter says, yes, happy members of Peace Works since 1999, of course. And Ruth Blackwell from Mud Creek Farm. So they're both organic farmers. We've got CSA Day coming up, and it was a great opportunity to talk about this new charter that Liz has helped put together. And we're working through those points here so we can all know what a CSA is and is not, or should be and should not be. Point number one, no middlemen. Point number two, know the origin and farms should be transparent. I mean, I'm summarizing here. Number three, farm members are committing and paying some in advance, which means really taking some of the risk of tough weather out for farmers. And some years you get more food and some years you get less, but that's part of being in it together. We're working through the, how many points? Total 12 points, right?
So right.
Points 4 through 12 are coming up after our only break. And as we go to break, Ruth and Liz, why don't you let the community know, if they've never done a CSA, you know, this is the time to start signing up. Should you call local farms? You know, is there a good way to find a healthy list that you might want to do? What would you tell people?
Well, the Vegetarian Society usually publishes a list. And usually about this time of year, we get one of the local newspapers to publish a list of the CSAs. And I think there's also a list on localharvest.org.
Localharvest.org?
Yeah, Local Harvest, you can search by your area. That's a great way to find CSAs. Also, if you just Google CSA in my area, you'll usually come up with a list on Google.
Okay, but again, as we work through this charter, is it your hope that farms will decide whether to sign or not sign this charter list?
That's right.
And have they started? Have
yes.
you contacted? That's
this
happened?
This morning, I was deluged with emails from all over the country, farms that are signing up.
All over the country?
Yeah.
Wow.
This is not just local. You say that I wrote this, but I actually compiled this from CSA charters from other countries, from my own experience, and then I sent it out to all the CSA networks that exist in the United States and to many CSA farmers and juggled all of the suggestions that people had and tried to fit it together so that it would work for as many farms as possible.
And are you satisfied with it? I mean, are you feeling like this is going to accomplish what you want?
I hope so. We'll see.
I think it's a great start. I think that it'll help CSAs, you know, have a logo on their website and be able to explain what that logo means and to let people know to look for that logo if what they really want is to support local farms.
And speaking of the logo, Ruth designed that logo. She is so multi-talented. She just whipped it out. And again, vetted it with all the people on this network who've been working on the charter so that people agreed on the language and the images that she was going to use. But she did such a beautiful job in putting it together. It's like an instant classic.
Right, it's nice to finally use my art degree.
Let's get that break. Listeners, you want to call and tell us about your CSA experience? 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. We're right back. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, we're talking Oscars. Is La La Land deserving of the hype? Is it going to win everything? What about the other films on the list? Have you seen any of the films? What do you think stood out this year? Our panel of critics will have their picks. We'll take yours as well as we preview the Oscars on Friday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Number four on the list for the new charter for CSAs in the USA and Canada is the farm nurtures biodiversity through healthy production that is adapted to the rhythm of the seasons and is respectful of the natural environment, of cultural heritage, and that builds healthy soils, restores soil carbon, conserves water, and minimizes pollution of soil, air, and water. Liz, that is an idealistic one, but how do you police it? If a farm says, yep, that's us, how do you know?
Well, I don't intend to police it. I think that the members of each CSA actually police it by biting into the food and tasting the flavor. You can tell when food has been grown using artisan care and craftsmanship. It really tastes much better. And it has sort of healthier vibrations. An important thing to understand is that that biodiversity is also our crop insurance. As Ruth said, if you grow 70 crops and two or three die, you still have 67 crops to put in the share. But that also outsmarts the insects and the pests, balances the nutrition, and helps us build carbon so that our farms are actually mitigating against climate change.
Ruth, do we have too much monoculture out there today?
I understand the reasons for monoculture. I mean, it's in a country where our government subsidizes certain crops, there's a little bit more insurance in some monoculture. But in terms of what it's doing to our soil and our environment, it's pretty terrible. So yeah, in a way, we do have way too much of it. I think going back to the point of policing, I think CSAs are inherently a little bit more transparent than other types of agriculture because we don't have a middleman. So you are in direct contact with your members every day. For me, I mean, my members pick up at the farm, so they're there every week. They can come out anytime they want and see exactly what we're doing.
And for PeaceWork, members help with some of the farm work. We have parties at the farm. We have potlucks. We allow people to come and camp so people see what we're doing.
Can I just mention, Sarah on Twitter says, one of my favorite days of 2016 was working on the PeaceWorks farm in Newark for my CSA work day. Danny on Twitter says, I was a member of Rose Valley Farm and then PeaceWork more than 20 years, a gift that taught us how hard farmers work. And on the phone is Marilyn in Rochester. She wants to jump in too. Go ahead, Marilyn.
Hi, I'm Marilyn Anderson, and I've been a member of PeaceWork, my husband and I, since 1990. And I come to PeaceWork maybe in a little different way than some people. I grew up on a subsistence farm out in Oregon. We grew everything. We grew nuts. We grew fruit. We grew berries. Our cellars were full of canned foods and fruits and so on but it allows me now as a CSA member to come to what the meaning of CSA is in a different way, I think, because I experienced that as a child, that kind of life. And of course, our farm, my father sold it when I entered high school, and so we were one of the millions of farmers who left their farms. And coming to PeaceWork is, well, it's good for my soul, but it's really good for my stomach, too, because the fruit, what's grown on PeaceWork is just superb, a superb quality. I can't tell you what high quality the vegetables are. My husband and I are happy members of PeaceWork since 1990, and I say, you try being a CSA member because it will make you have a new kind of relationship to food, and it's beautiful too. All the vegetables are just beautiful.
Marilyn, I got to jump in here because I don't think you're not getting paid by Liz, are you? Thank you, Marilyn, for the phone call. That was very sweet.
No, Marilyn has actually been a member since the second year were in operation. We were the first CSA in this area when nobody knew what it was. And Marilyn jumped right on it. But she has given back to us in many ways. She's a wonderful artist, and she's done some beautiful photographs and drawings of the farm.
So we're talking about what a CSA is and is not and what it means. There's a new charter for CSAs in the USA and Canada. Check out CSA Day online. You can see the charter. And, I think as time goes on, you'll have a really good sense for whether the farm that you want to maybe purchase a CSA through, or a share through, is conforming to the charter. So we've been going down the list. And let me hit the next one here. I think we're only at number 5. I've got to move. Farmers and members commit to good faith efforts for continuous development of mutual trust and understanding and to solidarity and responsibility for one another as co-producers. Why did you want to have that in there, Liz?
Well, it's the relationship between the farmer and the people who buy the food that's so important. Before I did CSA, I would pack vegetables into boxes and put them in a truck and ship them off to a store, and I never knew who was eating my food. And for me, as a producer, it is so much more satisfying to know that I'm feeding these people who become my friends. Most of my friends in Rochester, I know hundreds of people, have at some time or other eaten the food from our farm. And when I go to an anti-war demonstration or an anti-fracking demonstration, I see members of our farm, and I feel like, yeah, I fed the right people.
Okay, number six. Farm members respect the connection with the land upon which the CSA grows their food and strive to learn more and to understand the nature of growing food in their locale. And this sounds like what we were talking about, what Marilyn talked about, what Sarah on Twitter said. To the extent that you can get them there to see the farm itself and sometimes participate, that's a good thing, right? That's what you're going for?
Yeah, definitely. Part of our CSA is that we have a big pick your own section. And one of the main reasons we decided to do that is that people gain a different appreciation and understanding of farming in this area when they're actually out in it. So people can come out, pick peas, figure out what it's like to be out there in all different kinds of weather, understand that this is the season when peas happen and this is the season when peas don't happen. Teach their kids where their food comes from. It's very important.
It's also actually good for people's health to be in contact with healthy soil, because our inner biome and the micronutrients and critters in the soil reflect one another and are part of one whole cycle.
Before you think that Liz is spouting woo-woo, let me just tell you. The last time I had an allergist on the program, I mean, he said, no doubt about it. Kids who grow up largely in urban areas, largely inside, have way more allergies. Kids who grow up on farms are unbelievably immune, rarely have allergies. But when those kids, if they move away to urban settings within a year or two, they start developing allergies again. It's amazing what the body does when it's in nature versus when it is not. Really interesting stuff. Let me grab a phone call. Chris Hartman is on the line. And I don't know if your ears were ringing earlier, Chris. It's great to hear you. Thanks for calling the program.
Absolutely. It's good to be on. Oh. And hello, Liz and Ruth.
Hi there.
Hi, Chris.
So, Chris, I hope that you thought we were fair. In fact, we certainly would have called you earlier if I knew how much your name was going to come up. But, we had a few people who emailed the program, just mentioned the Good Food Collective. I'm a past member of the Good Food Collective. I think there's so much good happening there. So I hope you thought we were fair with you.
No, absolutely. And, I really appreciate the way you guys approached it. And I will say, you know, Liz, since I moved back to Rochester 12 years ago, she's just been a huge role model for me and a mentor, I know, for so many working in the sustainable food system in and around here. And our own process of sort of, how we're defining our project and how we see ourselves fitting into sort of sustainable food system work, Liz has been a real help in us differentiating ourselves from CSAs. And we've really worked hard to try and do that, again, under her guidance and her mentorship. And I will say I love CSA models. My own experience, I've been part of three different CSAs in Rochester, and I think they're a really important part of people's access to local food, a really important part of sustainable and equitable food systems, and wonderful, beautiful projects. But indeed, as you mentioned, there's no doubt we've really worked hard to innovate based on the CSA concept, but really looked to create alternative projects and create a model for us that, you know, engages a broad base of farmers and food producers within a collaborative network. And we've really prioritized convenience and ease for consumers. And we're not a CSA in that way. We've held on to some aspects of what it does and how we're supporting local farmers, but we've definitely walked away from other parts of that beautiful project so as to pursue the way we're doing things.
So,
but again, we're big fans of CSA. Mm-hmm. I know there's a CSA fair coming up soon in Rochester to really highlight the amazing amount of CSAs in this area that people have access to. And we're really supportive of that and see our work, again, as something different. But indeed, as you can imagine, we see it also as a really important part of the future of food and a sustainable food system that we're excited to be part of. I will also say, though, we also have the same concerns in the sort of broader topic that this is, as far as kind of corporate control or kind of profit-driven projects that can kind of derail good and important efforts going on in this stuff. So, you know, we share a lot of similar concerns, and as we build our project and build our company, we're really trying to hold tight to understanding those issues and designing appropriately forward. You know, we're a locally owned, certified B Corp, really trying to figure out honest and transparent ways to do what we do. We're trying to come up with new business models to make this stuff happen. And like local CSAs, we want to just be part of a collaborative set of efforts that are creating positive change. But I just wanted to call in and really throw our love out to the CSA world, and really just strong appreciation to Liz specifically and all the amazing work she's done there. And I will say Mud Creek and what Ruth's doing, it's just really great stuff. And the Good Food Collective is not a CSA. I want to make sure I'm saying that. But we're psyched to be working in loosely similar ways towards good food in this community.
Chris, it's been a little while since we've seen you here. In fact, time passes quickly, I find out. So let's get in touch outside of the program, and maybe we can come back and update people on, you know, how you've grown, but how you want to keep that mission in front of you and what you're doing now. And if you can, we'll come back and talk on the show soon.
Oh, I love it. I love it. We got a lot to share.
Thank you, Chris.
I see our CSAs and the Good Food Collective as part of a local food movement. And we have a lot of work to do, because with the trade agreements, what they've done, the free trade agreements, have opened our borders to more and more imports to the United States of food products. Before the NAFTA, most of the juice that people drank was from fruit grown and squeezed in the United States. Now, the majority, I think it's up to 70% of the juice, is imported. We can grow plenty of fruit here. We don't need to import fruit and juice. We need to take that back. It's healthier for our people, and it's healthier for our land.
Let me grab another phone call, and then we'll get back into the charter, because we got to get through six more points here. But Jan in Fairport's on the phone. Go ahead, Jan. Oops.
Hi, this is Jan Fellens from Fellens Family Farm in Phelps. And I'm not sure this has been mentioned, but on Saturday in Canandaigua at the New York Wine and Culinary Center, there's going to be a CSA fair where there'll be many CSA farms representing their farms, and they'll be very happy to talk about what they do. And I'm just not sure that was mentioned. And if it was, I'm sorry. I just turned on the radio and heard y'all talking.
Thank you. What time is that? What time does that run?
From, it's 10 to 2.
That's from 10 until 2.
Thank you,
Jan. New York Wine and Culinary Center in Canandaigua, right down on the lake.
All right. Thank you, Janet. Here's a question then. Let me ask, and I'll ask both Ruth and Liz this question. If I go to a CSA fair, can I print up your charter and say, hey, guys, have you seen this? Have you signed it?
Yes, you could.
Seriously, that's not a bad idea for consumers
to
do?
Yes, totally.
Yeah, it would be great.
All right. So, again, you can find, and Megan Mack and I, we will link to the charter, the new charter that Liz has helped collect, and she keeps saying hasn't written. I know. She doesn't want to take any credit for anything, but she helped put together, and it's the charter for CSAs in the USA and Canada. She's already getting a lot of feedback for this brand new charter, and we will link to that, and if you want to check it out and maybe take it with you, you can do that. So let's get back to the charter itself, and I'm going to keep reading some of the points. It's, again, 12 points. Number 7 is, farmers practice safe handling procedures to ensure that the produce is safe to eat and at its freshest, tastiest, and most nutritious. Why handling? What are the procedures out there that would give you a red flag on this? Why did this need to be there?
Well, there's been a great deal of fuss over the Food Safety Modernization Act, which is a monster piece of legislation which will be imposing changes on
farms. Did
you
say monster piece of legislation or masterpiece?
It's a great big program.
It's huge.
Okay, gotcha.
That has monstrous impacts on farms and will probably cost farms like Ruth's and Peacework $20,000 to do all of the water testing that's required to make sure that everything is up to the level that is really appropriate for a great big factory that's churning out peanut butter for millions of people. But a small farm does not need to be cement and stainless steel everywhere. You can have safe food just by using clean water and being careful. And after all, the people on our farms, we're eating that food ourselves. And if we were to make one of our customers sick, we would be out of business very quickly.
Okay. Number 8, CSA prices reflect a fair balance between the farmers' needs to cover costs of production and pay living wages to themselves and all farm workers so that they can live in a dignified manner, and members' needs for food that is accessible and affordable. Okay? Ruth, Liz, you want to hit that, the importance of that?
Like I said before, we're able to produce food for a little bit less money just because we're not dealing with the costs of shipping and storage. So I think it is important for us to be able to share that benefit with our members and provide food for a little bit less than what you would be paying for in the grocery store.
Okay. Number 9, farmers consult with members, take their preferences into account when deciding what crops to grow, and communicate regularly about the realities of the farm. You guys do that.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point. We send out an e-newsletter every week letting people know what's going to be in their share, what the weather's been like lately, how things are looking on the farm. Really, it's a partnership. A CSA is a partnership between the farm and the members, and they really have some ownership in the farm. It is their farm. And if we are communicating with our members all the time, finding out what they like, what they don't like as much, and are producing shares that they really want,
I have to
that
ask
helps
them,
up.
What do they not
them.
Want? What do they tell you they don't want?
Well, I mean...
Or they want less of.
We do a survey and we ask the question, what's your favorite vegetable? And what vegetable you wouldn't eat as a kid and you won't eat it now?
Okay.
And Brussels sprouts gets about half of the top rating and the lowest rating.
Wow, that would literally be my favorite.
So we give a choice.
It's a love or hate item.
Wow.
I think, and we do a survey every year too, and we actually list every crop we have and we ask two questions. We ask, What ones did you get too much of and threw some out, and which ones did you really want more of? And that gives us a good idea of what to grow the next year.
What's a quick snapshot of what people are maybe getting a little much of?
It depends on the season. This past year, our eggplant went insane. So at a certain point, I just stopped putting a number on it and said, take as many eggplant as you want.
Just take the eggplant.
And we still had extra, but...
I love cooking
some
eggplant.
People love
a little
that
eggplant stack. Oh,
yeah, some people love that. Some people are like, way too much eggplant.
Okay, all right. So number 10 on the list: farm members commit to cooperation with the community of members and to fulfill their commitments to the CSA. This isn't overlapping on some of the earlier points, Liz.
Well, it does a little bit, but the CSA is also a community of people and have a responsibility to one another. So. Our CSA has had a big core group that's been very important to keeping it going, where members voluntarily help with administrative tasks. So if someone commits to take care of the website or to schedule the work of other people helping with distribution, they need to follow through on that commitment. We're depending on it.
Number 11, farmers commit to using locally adapted seeds and breeds to the greatest extent possible. We're running out of time, but I know this is important to a lot of people. Ruth, why?
Well, for one thing, it's important to farmers because seeds that are adapted to local or locale do a lot better. I know that I, for example, will use a lot of varieties that have been developed by Fruition Seeds down in Naples just because they do better in my climate. But I think also a big part of this is that since we don't have to grow things that can be stored for a long time or shipped across the country, we can really choose varieties based on taste and how well they do for us, which means that members will be able to taste varieties that they've never had before that you can't find in the store.
And the other side of that is that the seed production over the whole world is being dominated by a very few companies. So using local seed and seed you grow yourself or buy from Fruition Seeds means you are fighting that corporate control.
Is that Petra Page Mann down there at Fruition?
That's right.
Yes.
She has the best radio voice. I mean, well, one of the best. It's like, her voice is in that category of you can bottle it and pour it on pancakes.
Exactly.
If you're listening, Petra. All right, so last point, number 12 on the list. The CSA seeks paths to social inclusiveness to enable the less well-off to access high-quality food and commits to growing the CSA movement through increasing the number of CSAs and collaboration among them. Liz, some final thoughts on that?
Well, for me and for most of the organic farmers I know, having our food eaten by low-income people, people of all ethnicities, as well as people who have the money to pay a premium, is just very important. We don't want to be yuppie food. And the CSA movement is now truly international, and it's part of the peasant movement to save family-scale farming.
Do you worry that it has become yuppie food in some places?
In some places it has, and if you buy it at certain stores, you will be paying a very yuppie price.
Okay, so there's your charter for CSAs in the USA and Canada. And Elizabeth Henderson behind that. Now you can ask farms, if you're going to join a CSA this year, you can ask them, have you read the charter? Have you signed it? If you haven't read it yet, will you read it and will you sign it? And if they don't say yes, then Liz and Ruth will ask you, why are you still going there? But, you know, hey, we all make choices in a very serious way this hour. You know, we're talking about the importance of supporting local farms.
Could I just mention?
You got 20 seconds.
Peacework has a May Day party Saturday, May 6th from 2 to 6 in the afternoon, and
cool.
People are very welcome to come dance around the maypole and share a potluck.
Saturday, May 6th, 2 to 6, Peacework. Very cool. And you can find Mud Creek online where?
MudCreekFarm.com.
MudCreekFarm.com. Chris wrote to us, if I join a CSA, Evan Dawson, how much kale do I have to eat? Make kale chips, man. If you get a lot of kale chips rock. Just grill them up, a little olive oil, a little sea salt, boom. That's my advice for you because, yes, sometimes there's a lot of kale. Embrace it. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Max, the producer, Ruth and Liz. I've enjoyed it greatly. Good luck to you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.